Blog Talk Radio.
There's something outside.
What is that?
Radio.
Happy Sunday, Monster X Radio listeners. This is your host, Gunnar Monson. Mr. Shane Hardcore Corson is actually traveling cross-country to a wedding or getting ready to. So with me today is our good friend, Julie Wrench. Julie, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Doing pretty good over here outside the URI forest.
Yeah, you guys are over there on the right coast. I'm over here on the left coast. So,
yeah.
And I just got back a little bit ago. I was out in the woods Friday and Saturday night with Shane, our friend Cindy Cattell, excuse me, and actually with the niece of Grover Krantz, Laura Krantz, and a friend of hers,
cool.
Kelsey. Yeah. The interesting thing is she did not even know her uncle till she actually read about him. She read about him in something to do with work and asked her dad and said, yeah, that, you know, he used to come to the family reunions, I guess, and measure family members' heads with a caliper. So,
oh my gosh. Now that was the granddaughter?
His niece.
Or the grandniece.
Yeah, so...
Oh, the grandniece, okay.
Yeah, for those of you
that would have been funny to see.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know who Grover Krantz was, he was a professor at Washington State University, anthropologist, like for 30 years. And one of the first scientists that really kind of came out and talked about Bigfoot and the possibility and wrote a book, great book, Big Footprints, which I coincidentally, before I even knew I was going to go out in the forest with his niece, I had started rereading it. So, and I'm like, man, that stuff sounds
That's
familiar. I think I say some of that stuff. I didn't realize how much I probably he influences my thinking on the subject, but he does.
Right.
And unfortunately, he has passed away, and he's actually, his skeletal remains, along with those of one of his dogs, are in the Smithsonian. So.
I know that. I really need to get over there and see that. I've been talking about that for a long time, but that would. Now, I don't know if it's still there or if it was just on display for a while. I'm not sure.
I think it was in the. I think we talked about that. I caught part of a conversation this weekend that he may currently be residing in the archives.
Shoot. They should bring him out once in a while. And
dust him off, yeah.
Listen to us. You should bring him out once in a while.
Well, we're going to talk a little. We're going to talk today about pareidolia and how that applies to Bigfoot research. And there seems to be a lot of it popping up when we get all these pictures with red circles. I love the cover that Shane came up with for this episode, because it's very much the red circle epidemic. So this is something you like. I mean, this is a hot topic, a hot button topic for you. I know that when we chat offline that that's something that just drives you crazy.
Yes,
I know
it. And it, well, the thing is, pareidolia is a type of apophenia, and that's a tendency to see patterns or shapes and random objects or, you know, even sounds. It's actually something that scientists, psychiatrists, psychologists have been studying for a long time. It can include somewhat of a delusional aspect, the apophenia, like schizophrenia type things. But with the pareidolia, that's more, you know, it's not related to psychosis or delusion so much as it's related to, like a, if you would, an instinct, something engraved in our brain from when we were, you know, cave dwellers. We always looked for that creature out there that wants to eat you, you know. So you really were always scanning the landscape for any type of potential danger. And they believe that just carried over for thousands of years. And I know that Carl Sagan, one of my favorite scientists, he wrote a book in 1995. And it was called The Demon Haunted World. And he talked about how the end, you know, a long time ago when an infant was being held by its mother, and it would recognize the face, and we learned to recognize faces, because if we didn't, then the bond would have never, you know, the bond between mother and child wouldn't have been as confirmed as it is if we weren't able to distinguish facial patterns and know that that, in that sense, is a good thing to be able to do.
Well, it's a natural tendency. Something that now, that in the past was a survival mechanism.
Right, it's more like a survival type thing.
Right.
It's like an instinct, because you know, as well as I do, theory of evolution, you know, back 1 million, 2 million, 3 million years ago, we weren't exactly sitting around computers. You
Thank
know, we,
God.
Yeah, we were, everything we did was based on instinct, evolutionary knowledge, you know, survival, self-protection. So I, you know, that's a lot of where all this, they think came from. So with pareidolia, like when you take pictures and you go home and you're looking through them and you're like, wow, that looks like Bigfoot. Well, what you're really doing is that's natural and normal. You know, you can't fault anybody for it. The thing is, they need to go back to that same exact spot, if possible, and do the exact same photograph and the exact same, you know, try to recreate everything that you can and take that picture. And if it's still there, then you can rule it out. The problem with the pareidolia now is people don't...
They don't vet their evidence.
Right, they don't vet their evidence. They just they think that by posting pictures of blob squatches, as we call them, faces
red
and trees, red, and then they circle them and they're like, "Do you see the Sasquatch?" And then when you say, "Well, I think this might be pareidolia," they get mad because they don't want to hear that, because it takes time and logic and scientific analysis to determine what we think is Sasquatch related is truly isn't. You know, like some people, I couldn't tell you how many times I've seen YouTube posts that says Bigfoot whistled at me. So I'm listening to it and it's a flippin' screech owl. It's a flippin' hoot owl. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many times. And
now some of that is just a lack of people under being familiar with their environment. And I mean,
right.
this basically, if somebody goes out with looking for something, if you go out looking for Bigfoot faces in the forest,
then you're going to
find them. Pretty much find them in any shadowy foliage. I mean, if you look hard enough, you're going to find something that looks like the shape. I mean, it's a general shape. And
right. And our brains are tuned to do that. So
right.
I think that people need to beware and be cautious about, you know, just because you hear a snap in the woods while you're out there looking for Sasquatch, that doesn't mean that that is a Sasquatch. But I, you know, I see people post these things where they're out in the woods and they hear this or they hear that and they're like, oh my God, it's a Sasquatch. You know, well, why do you think it is a Sasquatch? You really need to put more into why it couldn't be than why it could be. Mm-hmm. Like, could it just be a deer? Could it just be a raccoon? Could it be a, you know, anything?
That's no fun.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. That's no fun because that's where the science comes in and logic.
But that's, I could say that we had a pretty active audio night Friday night at up in the Mount Hood Forest. And I mean, the most interesting thing to me was we had this loud, there were six of us standing in our camp and a fire going and in like up the hillside from us, there was a loud like pop. And it, we all looked at it and like, what the hell was that? But, you know, we don't know what it was. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. But I know there's people that I've been out with that would immediately jump to, well, that's Bigfoot. That's a Bigfoot mouth pop. That's a Bigfoot, you know, cracking
right.
his knuckles.
That
that's
could
a
be
Bigfoot
or chest,
snapping his finger,
hitting
yeah.
its chest. You know,
whatever.
Because
yeah.
they do.
I mean,
primates do make that sound when they're. Up in their
right.
chest, it almost sounds like a mouth pop.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, we're going back to what we know to be true.
Right.
And that's also like confirmation bias. Now that's something all of us have at some time suffered from. You know what I mean? Because it's just human
yeah,
nature,
I mean, you...
because that's
right.
our biases. That's what we know in,
right.
in our life, our personal life. That's what we... You know, if you did a lot of research and read the books on Sasquatch activity, then you have read a lot about structures. You've read a lot about tree breaks, you know. And so people that – and again, I'm one of those types where I'm not naive enough to think that an 8-foot-tall, 600-pound creature moving through the woods isn't going to break tree limbs. I mean, come
right.
on, that's a natural occurrence. But it's a lot of times you see these tree breaks, and they're like, take pictures of it, and this is absolutely a Sasquatch did this. Well, you got to say to yourself, if these creatures do exist, because first of all, we haven't even proven they exist, scientifically speaking. So what we're saying is this tree was broken by a creature that's not scientifically verified. We have to always keep that in perspective. But people tend to just run with it, you know. Here's a tree break. Sasquatch did it. We need to start focusing on why couldn't it be? And you can have 1,000 answers as to why couldn't it be versus the one reason it could be.
You know, you're just a real Sasquatch research killjoy. But, I mean, that's the thing. Is people are it's a frustrating thing because I also get – people will send me pictures of foliage and say there's, you know, a Bigfoot face in there. Bigfoot was peeking at me. I was out in the woods. I took all these pictures. I didn't see it till I got home. Yeah, because you sit down with any photograph of the woods and start going looking for Bigfoot faces, you can find something that looks
right.
like a Bigfoot face.
And the more
like
you settle with the photo, edit-wise and contrast
right.
and tone,
sure.
the more things you're going to see. And that's like, let's say your forte is aliens. You could go out in the same woods with two different people together. They can take pictures, and by God, the face they saw was an alien versus the face they saw was a Bigfoot, but it's the exact same thing. That's confirmation bias.
Right. Yeah, you go out looking for, and I expect to find, and so I do, because I must have found
right.
something because I was out there looking. Yeah.
Yeah,
I,
and
real,
I,
yeah,
again,
part of
it's completely logical, and it's, a you know, entrenched in our brain and our mindset. But unfortunately, a lot of is why people don't take us serious, because we are.
Right, and how is that blob scotches and blob sounds. I mean, you know, it's a lot of to me, audio is the most ambiguous kind of evidence that you can have. I mean, just to you take six people and you have some weird, you know, you have some sounds in the forest and you try to identify what they are, I mean, and what made them, and you can get six different answers or 12 different
answers.
Right,
depending on what your...
Yeah.
Right, like, depending on what you think the end result should be.
Sure.
So how
do people avoid that? I mean, how do you turn that off if it's something that's hardwired in our brains?
I don't think there's any way to turn it off, so to speak. I think it's more of retraining yourself to be of a more logical, scientific nature and mindset. Like I always say, rule everything out before even ruling one thing in. You know, that's – and, I mean, we've all fell prey to it. You know what I mean? I think I mentioned on one of the last podcasts that when Jeff and I were in the woods in Ohio and I saw – something dark, and it was going back and forth behind this tree, and I felt my heart drop and my knees get weak because I thought it was one of those creatures going back and forth, you know, watching me. And then, you know, all of a sudden the wild turkey walks out from behind the tree. So,
how do
you know
that he didn't just
immediately
morph?
My brain is thinking, oh my God, it's one of those creatures, and it's watching me, it's staring me down, and you know, so. Now, had I turned and ran from the situation and not seen that that was a wild turkey, then in my brain, I saw one of these creatures swaying back and forth behind a tree. So that's why it's important, if you can, to go investigate what it is you're seeing, you know, at a distance.
Right. Well, in Shelley Covington, Montana, I coined the phrase Bigfoot last, which I think is the approach. Like when you're... The burden of proof is on.
Absolutely.
On, if I'm going to present evidence as it's Bigfoot, one, I need to tread lightly on making definitive statements that Bigfoot mm-hmm. does this or that. There's far more that we don't know than we do know. First of all, we haven't even proven them to exist.
Right.
For some people, they're a reality. I mean, for Shane had a sighting. And Shane is knows they exist. I mean, it's not a question of not. I have not had what I like to refer to as the confirmation experience. I think till mm-hmm. you see one, you got to leave some wiggle room that, you know. And then I flip the coin is when I'm approached by somebody who questions, well, what, those things don't exist. That's, you know, that... How do you know, how come we haven't found one? And I mean, my party line is that, well, if one piece of evidence isn't faked, misidentified, or imagined, then there's something to it. Then there's, I mean, something made footprints or something made, you know,
mm-hmm,
is
right.
If every single piece of evidence has to be accounted some other way. And there's a lot. So that's my counter, the devil's advocate when I'm approached by somebody who, you know, generally that's somebody who has not given it any real thought. And I've had a few people turn in that those kind of conversations, say, well, I think it'd be fun to go out with you and look. So.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
You know, that's the fun part is when somebody that's a absolute non-believer goes out in the woods with somebody and they hear these strange events going on around them, you know, even seeing something in the FLIR at a distance that's standing there, it's 8 feet tall, you know, those are the type of things you can start putting a little bit of more weight to. You're like, okay,
right.
Well, there's something in the FLIR. So it's all scientifically based, or at least it should be.
If you see glowing eyes
when you have a flashlight and you're mm-hmm. scanning the woods with a flashlight, for example, and you see a set of glowing eyes at a distance, Well, you can't assume that that's a Sasquatch.
Right.
A lot of people, I've seen photos of these eyes, you know, and I'm like, well, those seem like they're very close together. And you would mm-hmm. think a large bipedal creature would have eyes that are set further apart, just physically speaking. So to me, that picture of the thing sitting in the tree is probably an owl, because there's, unless it's just being devil's advocate, what if it's a baby Sasquatch? Well, we don't know, because unless you went over there with the flashlight and put it right on it, then you don't mm-hmm. know. And people are always like, well, that's, then they get mad at you because you say, well, could it be this or could it be that? And then people get mad at you, and then they block you, and then they don't want to be your friend anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's, they weren't your friend to begin with, but the thing is that real science you requires that you not be emotionally attached to the results. I mean, that you take in data, you collect evidence, you process the evidence properly, which means, you know, getting out there and actually, if you're recording audio, is to look at the audio in something like Sonic Visualizer, and then compare it to, you know, like the Macaulay library of sounds to see if it, it matches anything. I mean, there's a process, and it's a slow process. It is, it's fun to go in the woods and hear stuff and say, hey, I heard some really weird stuff. And I can attest that I had that experience this weekend, but I cannot tell you that anything, you know, that I experienced had anything to do with Bigfoot. Could it have? Could have. I mean, it could have been anything. You know, it could have been leprechauns,
right,
for a while,
anything.
But I didn't see what it was. And there was no corroborating evidence. There was no, you know, all evidence requires context. So when people are sending me pictures that they say, I went home and I didn't know it was even there, you'd think that you'd go back and take another picture or look at the area and.
Right, do a comparison.
That's a very, very least, and then look for any footprints. I mean, what other evidence is in the area? Is there a big, you know, trampled down area where you saw this? But generally, people are, it's not science. It's, you know, it's kind of a hobby, fun thing to do, to go out and find Bigfoot evidence.
Right. And, you know, I love being out in the outdoors and camping and hiking and all that, and that's great if you have things that happen to you while you're out there doing that you can investigate, then that can be quite exciting. But for the most part, quote-unquote squatching, unless you really love camping, can be quite boring for some people, you know, because they think it's going to be, you're going to go out there and within an hour you're going to hear some branches, and then you're going to hear a hoop, and then you're going to hear a growl. It isn't like that. I mean, you can go out for 300-400 times and get zero. You may be lucky
to
get one thing.
Yeah, you have to be willing to accept that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you have to be willing to accept that that's, and that the sounds that you hear in the woods, that there's a lot of natural sounds in the woods.
Absolutely.
And 99.99999, if Bigfoot exists, most of it's not Bigfoot.
Right. And you had mentioned Shelley Covington. Mm-hmm. She and I had a conversation before about the tree, like the they say they might bang on trees to communicate or whatever reason.
Tree knocks.
Wood knocking,
yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Well, we had that discussion about how temperatures, barometer, the seasons even affect certain trees. There are trees that expand and can make these sounds naturally. It sounds like a pop, or it sounds like a wood knock. And, you know, you got to rule a lot of that stuff out, because, you know, unless you know for sure, you know, that unless you study these trees that are in that area and you know for sure that there aren't any in there that will expand and make those noises, then, you know, you can't say, oh, my God, that was a squatch, because you don't know. It could be a lot of different things. We have to really dig down deep into all aspects of the environment you're going into. What kind of animals are in there? What type of trees are in there? Are the trees easily bent or no? You know, what are the sounds that the animals make in there? You have to, I mean, it's not just getting out of your truck and walking in the woods and sitting down and going, aha, you know, I'm here to take home that evidence. You really got to put a lot of time and effort into acclimating yourself to the environment you're going into. That way, you know, that's one way you can struggle against the confirmation bias, is because the more you know about the environment you're going into, the less apt you're to do the, you know, confirmation bias.
Right. And the you were talking about FLIR. We actually had picked up, we're up a trail from our campsite, and we're picked up a heat signature on the FLIR, and the person who was looking through the FLIR said, I'm seeing something that looks like a head peeking behind a tree. And a couple other people, and FLIR is not an infallible piece of technology. I mean, it still requires interpretation. What are you seeing? You know, you're looking through this and you get a heat signature. And then the decision is, well, how can we determine what are we looking at? Well, the best way was to walk towards it. So I walked down the trail in the direction that this heat signature was, and more likely it ended up being a tree, because other objects, you know, give off heat depending on weather conditions and, you know, where cover so that things get heated up and they don't cool down as quickly as the other. So basically you're just getting heat differential between the surrounding cover, the other natural environment. So it ended up being that it was nothing. I mean, it was, I ended up walking, and it's over this way. So, I mean, the likelihood that it's important to vet everything that you're doing. So.
Right. And the vetting thing is really key to all this. I think that, like, do you remember when, it's been a few months ago, but in the Facebook group, there was a post that showed a FLIR showing a gorilla sleeping in a tree.
Yeah, very, very.
And you could tell that was a real legitimate animal sleeping in a tree.
Right.
And that's because of the technology that they were using to record
very
that.
Very high-end, yeah.
Right, very, very high-end. You know, and my hope is, as technology advances, price will be coming down, you know, lower and lower on those type of things that you can use to observe. Right now, something like that would probably cost over $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
I personally am not going to invest that kind of money.
Right. Out of the price range of most
right, it's out of my,
people that are
out of my
most
pay
people
scale.
That are doing this as a hobby. I mean, well, that's one of the challenges of...
And that's one of the reasons why I think it's so hard to prove anything, is because there aren't research groups being funded by purse strings, you know what I mean, to buy this type of equipment and send people out, lots and lots of people, and lots of different areas that... you know, are more scientifically minded to be able to do the investigation. And that's one of the things that I think it's taken forever for any type of real solid proof to be found.
Yeah, it's citizen scientist or outlaw scientists, as I think Mark Marcel recently referred to them as the outlaw scientists. I like it, or rebel scientists. I like those.
Right.
But, I mean, it's... because it's all on, we're all doing it for the most part on our own dime. And that large concerted, you know, there's not been a well-funded expedition per se with all the bells and whistles that you would give you an advantage over. We're talking about if Bigfoot is real, is that
right?
They they are masters of their environment. They, you know, they can go places. One of the things that just always gets in my head is like, if, you know, you got an 8, 9 foot, 6, 7, 800 pound athlete in the forest, you know, what are they capable of doing? You know, they can cover terrain that, just look at known animals, deer, elk, bear, how they handle terrain.
Oh yeah.
I was out in the middle of a boulder field yesterday. After we were out doing some hiking, and I'm like, you know, a cougar could traverse this just like split seconds, you know, and how much effort it takes for humans just to get across something like that. But animals in that environment, and Bigfoot being that superb athlete and owning, you know, living in that environment, it'd be incredible to watch one, you know, move from, and that's when a lot of reports talk about how fast they are, you know, or how muscular they are. I've interviewed witnesses and like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. this, you know, and they can't say the word big enough. It was huge. It was big. It was, you know, there doesn't seem to be a word that's descriptive enough. But back to pareidolia, and seems to really be have come into like it's dominant right now. There's mm-hmm. lots of pictures being put up that with red circles. And mm-hmm. why do you think that is something that's happening now as opposed to in the past?
Well, I think social media, of course, plays a big part in that, because now we can take a photo and, you know, on our computer and do the red circle thing with a software editing thing, and just as soon as we're done, post it in a group somewhere. It's that simple, you know. I think that in some groups now, this is kind of a controversial topic, but there's some groups where there are more people in that particular group that tend to seek out faces and pictures, and they all will agree, oh yeah, I see it, oh yeah, I see it, oh yeah, I see it, you know. And it's almost like they want to feel like they belong to something, or they want to feel like, you know what I mean? It's like if everybody agrees that what they're seeing on my photo is a Sasquatch, then it makes me feel good about myself for whatever
reason.
It's just,
yeah, it's an attention-seeking behavior.
It can,
you know,
very well be that.
Right.
And again, that's the whole pareidolia being ingrained in our brain that we don't even realize what we're doing is a natural thing, but it certainly isn't enhancing any scientific investigation of these creatures. Because if everybody has a picture of Bigfoot on their phone, but yet we can't prove they exist, then it makes the whole thing look like a joke.
Right,
why, you know, why can't you prove it if everybody's got a picture of one on their phone? That type of thing.
Yeah.
But going back why I think, and again, like the Janosko Project, Paul Hayes,
mm-hmm.
his group, you cannot post blob squatches in his group. You cannot post things with red circles in his group. It's against the law. And there's a reason for it. Because all it is people start arguing and bickering, and then it gets on these long, drawn-out arguments and fights over what it could or couldn't be in this photo, and it's just really not worth the effort, the time. You know? So God bless him. He made the decision that that's not going to fly, and I wish more groups would do that.
So how about someone who has a picture and it isn't definitive, and they have what does it require now to present that as evidence?
Well, see, the thing is, and this is like a catch-22, we know that there's a lot of good makeup out there. We know there's a lot of good masks out there. We know there's a lot of good photo editing programs out there. And I think that if you get a real clear shot of one of these creatures up close and personal, I think that it's going to be no doubt that that's what it is. Like if you take a picture of a gorilla and somebody else sees a picture of the gorilla, they know without a doubt that's a picture of a gorilla. Because it's hard to, you can tell the difference between a gorilla mask, so to speak, and a gorilla. Now, if it's CGI, that's a different story, but I'm just saying basically, you know, known animal, you take a picture, you can see that's what it is. I think it's going to take a photo that's so clear, that's so concise, and able to prove it hasn't been doctored before anybody would even really consider it as evidence, scientifically speaking.
Well, and that's something that Shane and I wrote up together, and we're talking, and basically you'd have to be willing to have that the source analyzed all the way back to, you know, you took it on your phone, good, then somebody needs to, that it needs to be turned over to someone with the expertise to
right.
evaluate whether or not that is a real picture or that it's not been mm-hmm. photoshopped. And I don't
and,
think
and
that
can be done easily enough
right.
In today's technology. You can determine if it's been, you know, photoshopped, if it's been altered in any way. You can even determine the location where the picture was taken in some cases just by tracking back the picture on the computer.
Well, it's basically you're talking about a forensic situation.
Right.
You're going to be able to track, you know.
Track
the,
it.
Right. And if somebody's not willing to do that, then obviously that's – and I just don't
then
think
that's
that
a
anyone –
big red flag if they're like, well, no, that's, you know.
Right.
I'm telling you, that's what that is. That's a Bigfoot, and if you don't believe me, that's too bad. You know, then, okay.
Right.
How's
well,
that
and that to me, evidence, because I say it's evidence, is not scientific at all. And if that's your approach, then you're not in it to prove anything. And I granted, there are a lot of people, you know, that are looking for Bigfoot for from different perspectives. Some people just want to see one for themselves. They don't want to prove
mm-hmm.
anything to anybody else.
Exactly.
Some people, you know, some people are doing it and presenting evidence for attention. It's like
mm-hmm.
I, you know, and sometimes I think there's been conversation about this as somebody may have started out with something legitimate and had some stuff happen and they saw how much attention they got from that. They enjoyed the attention. And they couldn't replicate their original experience legitimately, so they may go off and hoax something, make you know,
right?
Because they need that accolades, the attention that it brings. So that's
right.
That's
and
a dangerous part of.
There have been some well-known researchers that I feel have fell into that trap. I think they started out well-meaning, may even had some actual evidence. But if you don't ever, and if you know, if you're putting your name on the line and you're, you know, everything that you base your, I don't know how I'm trying to say this, if you're basing who you are by how people accept whether or not you're this fantastical researcher, then you got to continue to have fantastic evidence.
Right.
Well, we see what has come in the past. certain type of animated Sasquatch heads that were taken supposedly
right.
the real deal. And the controversy that comes around that. I mean, it's just, it goes on and on and on and on. It's nonstop controversy and everybody's fighting about it, and you know, while everybody's doing that, the real evidence is being overlooked over here.
Well, I found that that groups like the Olympic Project, they don't put their stuff up on Facebook to have it analyzed. There's a well-known Bigfoot researcher that does a podcast that says Bigfoot will not be proven on Facebook.
Social media, and, nope.
But, you know, it. And the thing is, when once somebody, I'm of the opinion is once somebody has hoaxed something, they've lost all credibility in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I've been out with people that I had an experience a number of years ago where I went out with a group. While we were out, we found this big pile of scat. Nobody knew what it was, but it was collected in a plastic bag. And at the end of the expedition, nobody wanted to mess with it. So basically it got buried. The second time that I went out with that group, there was some folks there that hadn't been there the previous time. And the person who had buried the scat was telling them how we had found Bigfoot scat the last time that we were there.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last time that I went out with that group because I like, okay, all this, they were having all these, you know, contacts of Bigfoot here and Bigfoot there. And it just took the wind out of it for me. I was like, it contaminates all your evidence. Doesn't matter if you have you basically have raised the bar for what you need to present to a body and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And it better.
Yeah. Body or body parts.
Right.
You know, like a hand, an arm
that
is verified, scientifically verified to be something of an unknown primate or whatever it is. Before you come out and say, hey, look what I found. You know what I mean? That's another thing I think is we have to watch how we present what we do have because then we make fools of ourselves. So we have to be careful, you know, just doing it scientifically. If you follow the scientific mindset, you're not going to make an announcement and say, hey, we found this or that before your test results are in.
Right. No, and that's the challenge is because people get excited about their potential finds. And like you say, it's confirmation bias. I found this. I want it to be Bigfoot related. And I don't know any science person. I'm just going to put it out there on Facebook and let social media weigh in on it. Yeah.
See what they can say. I mean, that's kind of like, and I'm not going to mention any names, but that's kind of like a certain person that takes a 3-foot long turd on the circuit with them in a glass box saying this is a Bigfoot turd. I mean, that's just, to me, that's bizarro. But that's what some people do because they love that attention.
Well, and to me, that's... Unless you cannot make definitive statements based on anecdotal evidence and anything that you happen to find in the woods that hasn't been properly vetted, how can you say Bigfoot did this or Bigfoot, this is Bigfoot crapped, unless you saw Bigfoot, you know, and then you documented it.
You run right over there.
But you also then need to process that, even if that's the case.
Exactly.
Did you take pictures of it? You better have a picture of it, or else you've only got an anecdotal story, and then you can't take that scat around and show it to people and say that it's
yeah, sure you can. Why not? It makes for a great conversation piece.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And a while back, Shane was approached by a young man that was very great outdoorsman and had come upon this scat that looked strange to him and even saved some of it. And I believe he even gave Shane some in a jar. But you didn't see it come up on Facebook or it was never, you know, it wasn't tested for DNA. First of all, it's not that easy to do, especially previously. Now this eDNA stuff is is a kind of a game changer. If you find mm-hmm. something like that, there's it's going to be easier to identify what, and that's more soil, I think, than scat. I'm hoping to get Todd Disadel back on to
mm-hmm.
talk
yeah,
about how you can apply this environmental DNA. And in fact, he is doing the eDNA testing on the nest material and soil that was collected by members of the Olympic Project and Dr. Jeff Meldrum
mm-hmm.
with the intent of having that
right.
now process. And there you go. You're going to have this evidence vetted.
Right. And as you know, they have never come out and said, we found Bigfoot nests. No one on the Olympic Project has ever said that. What they have said is it's unusual. It's something you don't see every day. We have some DNA tests going on, and then we will let you know what the results are. That's what good investigators do.
Right, and that's...
And hats off to them.
And that's... I know, because as someone who's interested in the subject, you know, I get anxious about... And I'm a member of the Olympic Project, but... And I have a great appreciation for the way that this project has been handled. It's slow. Real science is slow. The shortcut to proving Bigfoot exists or not is to go out and get a body. That's
mm-hmm.
and if that was easy to do, I think it would have already been done. I
oh,
know
absolutely.
People that whose end goal was to go out and shoot a Bigfoot, and they gave up after a while because it just they couldn't do it. They thought that they knew where they could do it, and it didn't happen. So,
right.
So,
and you know, that's also a controversial topic about shooting
kill
them.
Or no kill. Yeah.
Kill or no kill.
Kill versus no kill. Right.
Right. And
yeah.
I mean, I don't know what these things are. I don't even know if they exist, but if they do exist, I don't think shooting one and dragging the corpse in is the best way.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that does a lot of time is the way. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not saying go out and kill one, but I'm just saying it's going to take a body before we can learn what these things are. Now, whether the body's alive or dead is going to be irrelevant to the scientific world. I prefer it be alive and us not, like, capturing a bunch of them and putting them in the zoo. You know, that's another thing that... if these things do exist, they're extremely intelligent because they know what the humans are capable of doing.
And they're masters of their environment.
Mm-hmm.
And as I like to say, there's, you know, it's kept a specimen alive or dead, preferably. I mean, if you could, it'd be great. I remember when I was a kid in grade school and we had to write a report or story. And I remember writing a story about an expedition to go tranquilize a Bigfoot.
tranquilize it. Yeah. That's been thought about.
It has its own challenges, you know, because you could in theory kill an animal that you don't know how much to tranquilize them. The other danger is you don't tranquilize them enough. Right.
Right.
And now you've got this pissed off 9 foot tall, super strong athlete who is pissed off and wants to break you in half. So, I mean,
it's not that easy. I mean,
yeah,
to tranquilize animals, you have to,
you know,
as veterinarians.
There's an expertise to that. Yeah.
Right. You got to know how much they weigh. And there's a scientific formula to determine how much you need in order to just tranquilize them and not kill them.
Right.
Well, if you don't know what your subject is going to weigh or how tall it is or its mass, then
right.
there's no way to determine the exact amount of tranquilizer. So there again, there's another issue. You know, when people say, why don't they just go out there and tranquilize one? Well, there's really never any easy answers.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know
so
what
you
I mean?
Did tranquilize one. You don't know what their social structure is that they, you know, there's many reports where there's more than one. So you tranquilize the one and the other, I don't know if I would want to participate in that. It just
right.
seems like
it could get scary, you know
situation.
What I mean? It's like,
but
when, you,
I
when
mean,
you're
the
in
other,
their element, you know, and you piss one off and there's, you know,
right.
like you're, let's say you put a dart in into mother and father's over there. I mean, I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of that.
Right. Well, and the other possibility would be find skeletal remains. I mean, that would
mm-hmm.
be another way to, unfortunately, and that's one of the go-to questions for, you know, the skeptic is, well, how come we haven't found a body? And we discuss that all the time is that, you know, we don't find it's much larger populations of deer, elk, bear, cougar. We're talking probably about the rarest animal in the forest and animals don't just generally fall down in the forest and keel over. You know, an animal goes in hike when it doesn't feel good. They will go in and hide themselves to protect themselves from predators so that they don't get eaten alive. So that a lot of times is some remote location, and then they die, and then the forest consumes them in a pretty rapid fashion. So that
mm-hmm.
that isn't even, you know, touching on the theory that they buried their dead. Could they?
Right.
They could.
I mean, there's so many.
They could. Right. But that's
we don't
another.
Know if they do. We don't know. I mean, I've even heard people say, well, they're cannibals.
Yeah. Right. That they eat their dead. Yeah.
So you just, I mean, there's so many variables to all of this. And, you know, it after a while, it just, you know, the reason why I'm involved in all this is because, you know, where I'm from, there's a long history of sightings in Montgomery County, North Carolina. I want to know what it is they've been seeing. Okay, I want to know what this thing is. Is it really exist? And you know, like with tree breaks and that sort of thing. Yeah, I believe that if there is that type of creature out there, it would only make sense. If they're moving through the forest, they'd be making somewhat of a mark if they're walking in the thick brush.
Right.
However, most things walking through the forest take the path of least resistance, like a game trail, that type of thing. So you're going to find less evidence of it being there. So, you know,
exactly.
It's not an easy find.
No. Well, I would like to tell people that out there that consider themselves researchers, if you're actually researching with the intent of bringing forth evidence, you want to share that evidence with other people, then get an idea of what you're doing, what is required. And you're going to have to let go of the emotional attachment to what you bring in. I mean, if you put something up on Facebook, first of all, that's not a scientific forum for determining whether or not evidence is real.
Right.
But, and you're going to get ripped to shreds most, if unless you provide something that has a really good context. So go collect real evidence, vet that evidence. I mean, that's, or
betting,
keep it to
right.
yourself until you get something that's worth sharing. There's a lot of, I guess I'd call them Bigfoot yahoos now that are out there putting evidence up on YouTube or making videos
Dear
on
Lord.
YouTube where everything is, you know, everything that they hear in the woods. And it's, is it conscious pareidolia or is it, you know, or unconscious pareidolia? Are they're aware that they're putting up stuff that isn't in real, that's is hoaxing, or maybe
right.
they just have extreme pareidolia, and I've experienced that with folks too, that being out in there, everything is Bigfoot. You know, they go out with the Bigfoot on the brain, and you are, if you're out looking for evidence of Bigfoot, you do already have Bigfoot on the brain. So
yes,
you have to temper that and be aware that not everything, you know, Bigfoot last, run it through everything. All evidence should go through the scientific process of where, you know, you look at it. Okay, I've collected it. What do I do with it? You know, while we were out this weekend, Shane had multiple audio recorders out. I know that Shane in the past has got some interesting things on audio. He doesn't run to Facebook to put it up. I mean, it goes in because it, you know, you go through the process of collecting the audio evidence. You listen to it. You look at it on like a sonic visualizer. You compare it to the Macaulay Library of Sound, and best case scenario, generally with audio, it goes into an interesting bucket.
Right. Because you don't have a real specimen.
Right.
Scientifically verified to compare that to. So again,
right,
like you said, it goes into the unknown or interesting or, you know, but then when you have a lot of unknowns in the pot from all over the country,
mm-hmm,
by different people who don't know each other and they sound
right,
exactly the same on the graph, then that's something to really, that's interesting to me then.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's
and our
the type of thing
group,
that
when we first started, we made collaborated with some other groups and found that some of the audio recordings that we had that were unusual, they also had in an area that there had been more corroborative evidence, you know, sightings, footprints found. So you need that piece. The other only other way really a specimen, and I guess you could refer to a skeletal remains as a specimen as well, you know, or some kind of long-term study that has a lot of corroborating evidence, clear photos,
mm-hmm,
DNA
right,
samples, you know, just having Bigfoot, saying that Bigfoot come and visit you at your house and you're feeding it is not going to prove Bigfoot exists.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not interested in proving they exist, then that's a different kind of experience that you want to have. For those of us that are, and even those of us that are interested in confirmation of the species, we have different reasons for doing that. Part of that might be conservation. You know, I talk to people and they say, you know, we need to prove they exist to protect them. And I guess shouldn't we be protecting that environment anyway, because for the known animals, I mean, one more animal in there shouldn't change the way that we're managing our forests and woodlands. And, you know, so I have a hard time with the argument that we need to kill a specimen of a species for their own protection, because Bigfoot doesn't really give a rip to be proven or not. So
right, and so far they're doing a pretty good job of protecting themselves, because no one's been able to prove they exist.
Exactly. Well, Julie, I want to thank you for spending this time with me and chatting about pareidolia and Bigfoot in general. Good times. I like doing Monster X because I just like to talk about Bigfoot with my, and I get to do it with cool people like you that have this level head about the idea of how we go about looking at this subject. So thanks,
well, I
Julie.
I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. No,
it was a good, good topic tonight.
Yeah. I think folks will enjoy it. For those of you that are listening, join us next week for another episode of Monster X Radio. Remember to swing by SquatchCoffee.com and pick up some of your favorite blends of Monster X coffee. Hey, that's a good idea, of Sasquatch coffee. We still have a few bags of the Bob Gimlin variety left. Those, once they're gone, they're gone. So
awesome.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And for Julie Wrench, this is Gunnar Monson. Have a great week. Keep it squatchy, everybody.
Good night.
but not too squatchy.
Thank you all for your support.
Thank you for joining Monster X Radio.